I love talking with people who have been part of this midlife journey and have been able to take control of some of this questioning and identity shift and taking everything that's coming at them from outside the world, inside their bodies, and focus on what they want and what they're getting out of it. I am talking today with someone who has a few different chapters when it comes to this conversation, some of it internal, some of it external. And what I love most about this conversation is I think we're going to be talking about parenting, emerging adults, and understanding that that identity and that role shifts whether you like it or not. And how you roll with it is all part of embracing this amazing time of midlife. Welcome to Surfing the Quicksand. I'm your host, Kathy Vines. Being in my mid-50s, and I know a lot of my viewers and listeners are as well, I am always struck at how we're constantly dealing with the volley of things that change outside our world, inside our world, and we are over and over again, dealing with how do I strike a new deal with what's on my plate? Whether that's physically, emotionally, mentally, what's going on with our family and business and life and work, we are always volleying to come what next. And sometimes we're dealing with many of those things at once. Today, I wanted to bring on somebody that I've known for a long time to talk about her experience of dealing with a few heavy things at once and how she's navigated through that question of identity, that question of purpose, that question of relationships to others, the question of what's going on in my body. And I am really inspired of how she continues to prioritize just really patient evolution with herself and sharing her experiences with the rest of us. I'm introducing you today to my friend who is a licensed clinical social worker and a therapist. She works with individuals and couples and people in trauma. So for sure, processing thoughts and feelings comes a little naturally to her. And I love that she's going to model a little bit about that and self-reflection for us today. My guest today is Meredith Wakelin. Welcome, Meredith.
Hi, Kathy. So good to be here with you.
Again, I know we're going to dive into some things that feel very personal. So, I again at the top want to thank you for doing that. I want to introduce a little bit about kind of your story, and we don't need to go back more than even a year or two. Just really talking about what's kind of the plot line for you in midlife over the last couple of years that you think is the backdrop to some of the things we'll talk about today.
Yeah, I think in several different dimensions. Definitely my health, issues with my blood pressure, and we'll go into more detail about that. And parenting young adults or emerging adults, and that changing, ever-changing relationship, my business and shifts in business, tides and changes that happen there. Being self-employed and also just aging parents, though that's not a huge issue for me. It's certainly on my mind and been part of the last couple of years for me.
You mentioned self-employed, and I too am self-employed. And so I've talked to people on this podcast about some of the pressures that go along with being self-employed. I know that's not really the focus of our conversation, but can you share a little bit about what that self-employed part means for kind of ground setting in your equilibrium at home?
Sure. So last year, I started the new calendar year really excited with all sorts of goals. I was doing your organizing challenges I have for the last several years. And then, like, something shifted with my practice, and the phone wasn't ringing as much. And I've gone through tides and changes with things being busier and things being lighter. But suddenly it just seemed like my caseload kind of dropped off, and it was a really unexpected shift. And at first I just sort of was surfing with it, perhaps, and running with it and allowing it to be. And then it just seemed to keep going on and on and on. And so finally, probably late summer, I started reaching out to more colleagues and letting them know what was going on and that I needed to build up my practice again. But it did bring up all sorts of stuff for me because I really hadn't encountered anything like that before in my 15 years of practice. I think I'm 16 or 17 years in. I can't even remember anymore. But it was sort of a first, and my pride was involved, my just sort of self-esteem around and my self-concept about, my work is a big part of my identity and who I am and how I feel like I contribute in the world. And so that was a kind of a big shift for me to experience that and have to navigate it and figure out what to do. And I think the big takeaway that I want to share today about that experience was that when I started asking for help and letting people know, letting my colleagues know that I was open to work and if they had anybody that they wanted to send my way, and allowing my pride to just sail off and not be at the forefront for me. Things started to shift again, as inevitably they do. And it just was an interesting, I think, yet another thing that happened. Maybe if that had happened when my kids were still home and I was busy doing other things, it wouldn't have hit me so hard. But I think it hit even harder being an empty nester, and having that kind of space.
I think that empty nester, right? So as kind of said a few minutes ago, lots of things change your relationship to others, and emptiness is almost literally like your relationship to your space and your home and how you're spending quiet time and self-reflection, because there isn't the distractions of kids and kids who need attention, or kids who are just like a joy to be around, whatever it is. That empty nest feeling really must bring on so much more attention to identity at this phase, whether or not you're 55 or 45 or 75, just going through empty nesting that first time.
Absolutely.
How did this start to unfold for you, realizing like, oh, we're empty, we're empty-ish, we're that kind of process of unfolding to emptiness for you?
So I have one that's graduated from college. He's 25, my oldest, and my youngest is 22, and she's a rising senior. I guess she'll be a senior next year in college. I feel like I've been experiencing the emptiness for a while now, but I think, and there were parts of it, I think, initially that were pretty fun and exciting. And Paul and I were doing more traveling and things like that initially. And then I think we sort of settled into, okay, well, like work and home and life. And for me, I think my business took more of a forefront for me, as well as looking at, I started training for some different events, training for, I think the first thing I did was train for a half marathon in San Diego. And it was actually then that I realized I was in the midst of the training that I wasn't recovering as well. And I had a follow-up with my doctor, my primary care. And my blood pressure was elevated. And I've been an athlete and sort of a fitness enthusiast my whole life. And it was shocking to me that I had elevated blood pressure. And so this is sort of the, I guess, getting into the health parts of my story, but it's connected. I think, having that space, the empty nest space, opened up. Oh, I'm going to try some different things and do some things I didn't have time for. And so I was training pretty heavily. And then not recovering well, not feeling all that hot, following up with my doctor, recognizing that my blood pressure was elevated. She actually had me wait until I finished and did the race, to start trying to do some blood pressure lowering medication. But I had a lot of grief too. Like, how is this possible? I don't even know, maybe 53 at the time. I'm almost 56 now. So at the time, I was just shocked and I was kind of angry, disappointed. I think it also hit that midlife, like, what is even happening? Upon reflection, now I know I was, in the throes of perimenopause. My sleep was not great. I've read since that some women have some symptoms like that, more anxiety, maybe elevated blood pressure, or things like that can come as a result of that process. Also, one of the things I was looking at, especially when I was training, I wasn't drinking as much, but I was still drinking alcohol at the time, periodically, socially. And when I'd go 2 or 3 weeks without having a drink, socially, I noticed I was recovering a little bit better. And then I started to wonder how my blood pressure might be connected. I kept reading that could be a thing, that even a small amount of alcohol, depending on the person, could make a pretty large impact on markers like blood pressure, sleep, things, stress, resilience, recovery. So I think it was in 2025, January 2025, I ultimately said, oh, I'm going to do a dry January. And I noticed I was sleeping better. I noticed overall that I was just feeling better. And it's not like I was drinking that much. I mean, that's the thing. I think during the pandemic, a lot of people were drinking more. So there was certainly that. But I've never been like a heavy, heavy drinker. It was a pretty moderate amount. But I think even a small amount, I was recognizing was having a pretty large impact on my health. And so, actually, last year, about, I want to say it was maybe in May or June, a follow-up with my primary care doctor, my blood pressure was actually low. And I had stopped taking the medication just because I was feeling a little bit like maybe it might not be necessary. And so I wanted to check it out with her. And she said, yeah, let's just give it another couple of months and see how you're doing. And I let her know that I had stopped drinking. And she said, yeah, that may be just what it was, and or a part of the picture. Plus, I was fully through menopause at that point. And so I went back, followed up, and she's like, yeah, I don't want you taking it. It's actually low normal now, and I don't want you like passing out and hitting your head or
No, thank
something
you.
like that. I was like, yeah, let's
Yeah,
not
let's
do
not do that.
that wouldn't be fun.
Yeah.
So I think the takeaway was, as I was in that alcohol-free journey, seeing what it was like and what it felt like, I recognized it was having a larger impact on my health in midlife than I had originally thought. So I steady as she goes. I'm like, I haven't had anything to drink since and don't really see any reason to do so.
Yeah. I'd love to talk about some aspects of this in a little deeper, if that's okay. The first is that sense of there's actually a difference in the world between I'm a drinker or I drink alcohol, and alcohol itself is a chemical, like there's a chemical compound structure and it impacts us in a physiological way, right? There's whether you have one sip or one bottle or a case, right? Like if there's something going on in your body that's saying alcohol's not right for me right now, that chemical reaction, like I think a lot of people, it's hard to kind of separate out. No, those are two different things between I'm drinking and I've introduced something into my body that my body actually doesn't handle very well ever or anymore. I know I deal with this with my father, who has liver disease from his diabetes. Like, his doctor's like, no more alcohol, not even non-alcoholic stuff, because there's stuff that's in there that your body just can't process. And when I think about, you mentioned, gosh, I know now that I was in perimenopause and there were things going on there, right? So much on Surfing the Quicksand, we do talk about women's health a lot, and it's, in some ways, it's hard not to say, oh, there's more to women's health than just perimenopause and menopause. But also, there's so much that we don't even think about that is still perimenopause or menopause related that's impacting our bodies, right? So you talked, one thing that you talked about is sleep. Right. And you, it sounds like it came to you from a, gee, I'm not recovering like I used to when I'm going out for a run. Right. So there's that question of like, gee, if I hadn't had space in my life to start running again, how might have this turned up? If I hadn't had these other things that created the spotlight to say, oh, this part of my life is off a little bit. But for me, I've noticed, and I, around the same time as you, right, I notice, even if I have a glass of wine, like I just don't sleep well. I don't get to sleep. I don't stay asleep. My sleep is restless. I'm looking at my app in the morning, like, oh, my sleep score is a two, right? Whatever it was. And so you get to a point where like, all right, what am I choosing? What am I prioritizing? Everything in our lives, when we're lucky, is through a choice. And saying, am I willing to say, sleep is more important to me than the cocktail, than the glass of wine I did, or whatever that is. So I myself found that, if I look at my life now, if I have two glasses of alcohol in a month, that's actually a lot. I don't even think I do that much, but it's probably one. But I was that I would not call early pandemic years that, and even 2 years ago, I was not that. So for me, alcohol and exploring less alcohol has been like, I know what it's doing to my body at this age, and it wasn't doing it to my body 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
Exactly. And I noticed the same things. I think for me, the sleep was certainly a big piece of it, but it was actually like my performance running that I couldn't tolerate, not performing at the levels that I was accustomed to performing at. And just for background in terms of like fitness, and I mean, I am an avid snowboarder. I live in Colorado, in Denver. I do trail running and lots of hiking, paddleboarding. So fitness and exercise have been an integral part of my life. I think what I was really recognizing was the recovery. And I'd do a long run and then maybe be at work or be at home and just feel like garbage. I wasn't, when I say not recovering, it was just like even throughout the day, just not feeling great. And so pushing myself at higher levels or even levels that I had been doing previously just wasn't working. I wasn't feeling good. So
And that
that was
sounds, oh,
pretty
sorry.
aversive. No, it's okay. That was pretty aversive, just that feeling.
And again, it sounds like your deduction was, it's not the alcohol that's doing that to me. It's my high blood pressure, my elevated blood
Probably.
pressure that's doing to me. Can I crack that code?
And at the time, I didn't know what it was. It wasn't until I followed up with my doctor, and she's like, "Well," and my blood pressure actually wasn't that high. I can never remember the numbers, like, but it was the lower number that was like 90 instead of 80. Like it's supposed to be 80 or below. I think now it's like 70, right? Like it's so it was just slightly elevated. The top number was always fine. It was like in the 120s, which I think is normal, somewhere in there. Now it's like maybe 110. Like it's so it's I think for what was good for my physiology and for my body, that was changing. And I just didn't know until I knew. And I think here's the thing that I would like people to hear is to trust and pay attention to those feelings. If you're not feeling good, not to just dismiss it, but to pay attention and to listen. And to take it seriously, that if you're not feeling well, if you're not recovering as well, to get curious about what might be impacting that was really what got me thinking and tweaking what I was doing and how I was doing it. And
I
so
think,
here I am.
yeah, I think that that advice around paying attention, and more importantly, to not dismiss
That's right.
little signals that are coming your way, because how many of us can say, like, well, it's because I'm stressed. It's because, gosh, I haven't been focusing on good meal planning the way I used to. It's because I've got too much going on with parenting or taking care of my parents. There's too
Right.
much else going on externally that I can't control. That I'm sure that's all it is. I'm sure it's just stress. I'm sure it's just anxiety. I'm
Right.
sure it's just, oh, it's probably just perimenopause. I'll just muscle through it and be fine. But it can be something more serious, or more importantly, it can be something you can do something about.
That's right. That's right. And I think in my case, just the inconvenient truth, because alcohol had always been part, not a huge part, not a central part by any stretch of the imagination, but it had been a part of my life. And so to really get curious about, oh, wait, is this thing that's always sort of been in the landscape actually no longer serving me or doing anything for me? And actually creating some underlying health conditions, affecting the things that I love to do and how I feel, and me getting to be the vibrant, robust, healthy person that I want to be. And so, so it was definitely a journey of exploring and seeing what made the most sense. And for me, plus I, to be honest, I like a streak. So once I start something, I sort of, I like to keep the streak going. I'm that kind of person. So it's just like, why even bother? I don't want to feel any different than I feel today, as long as I have a say over it. And that's something I have a say over. So.
I love it when people kind of know themselves, right? And you know what motivates you or kind of what punishment you're avoiding, whatever that is. Like, that is such a key to behavior change or goal achievement, to understand, like, all right, what's the underlying foundation that you need to work towards it? So when you, like, hey, I like a streak, I'm going to do a thing that's streak adjacent, and that in itself is going to motivate. I love that. I want to go back to kind of, you did talk about, gee, drinking was part of my, wasn't a big drinker, but it was part of my life, right? So, and now, again, this is another hint towards identity shift, right? Identity shift driven by external, in this case, an internal factor, but, external reasons to shifting identity. The other part that's going on here, as we've talked about, is this gradual empty nesting and your parenting emerging adults. That in itself is an identity shift.
Yes, absolutely. I think going into more of a like consulting role with my kids, and being a safe landing, I think I've always been a safe landing for them, but that shift between from being sort of ha so hands-on and so involved in the day-to-day, and then having to reconfigure or reconceptualize, I guess that's the right word, what my role is and how, I tell my kids all the time, I've never been a parent to a 20-something. This is all new for me. And so one of the strategies I've used with them is to say, I've never done this before. I hadn't done any of the other stuff before either, but never done this before. So I don't know how much time you want to spend together. Both my kids, I'm fortunate right now that they both happen to be in state and actually here in Denver. But it is sort of this situation where does that mean that we spend a lot of time together? Or we do family meals, or what does that look like? And how much engagement do we do? And what do they want? Because they're also defining their own lives and, exploring and doing some of their own things, a lot of their own things. And so That's been kind of an ongoing conversation. And one thing that I'd like to share is the conversation that we have is the difference between obligation and commitment in our family. And so obligation is, to me, things that we're supposed to do or we should do. Obligation comes outside of ourselves. It's what we think we're supposed to do. But our commitment, I ask my kids, like, what's your commitment to our relationship? And that commitment comes from in here. It's about you and who you want to be and how you want to show up and how you want to engage in meaningful relationships and our family relationships. And I always say to them, I want you to come from that place of commitment, and choosing and choice rather than this feeling of obligation. Well, oh, it's such a drag. My mom, I have to. And I think that conversation has really freed all of us up to think about who we want to be, how we want to be, how we want to interact with one another. And because temperamentally, this about me, Kathy, but I don't really like to be told what to do, and I don't really like shoulds. I just don't. I like that freedom to really trust who I am and what's in here. And I want that for my adult children as well. And so that has been a really important part of our conversation and discussion. And it's a work in progress. It's not perfect, but I think we're finding our way. And so just to share kind of what that looks like is I realized when I was preparing for our conversation that, there were a lot of things that I would think about when the kids were little. Like, I would think, this isn't what I had in mind when I thought about having kids. And then I was thinking about it and I was like, oh, everything that we're doing right now, like my daughter's going to yoga with me and we're doing this improvisational dance experience. It's kind of a somatic movement thing together a couple times. Well, let's say we'll do it like once a month or once every other month. And, my son and his girlfriend come and play pickleball with us, or we go snowboarding in the mountains. We had an Easter egg hunt on Sunday with adult kids. It was hilarious and fun. But that's what I had in mind. The things that we're doing are the things that I actually envisioned parenting would be. It's the good stuff, and it's a lot of fun.
I imagine, and people know I don't have kids, but I'm around lots of people who do. And again, at this age, hearing that that push pull as the emerging adult comes out, the I'm independent, leave me alone. Wait, mom, come back, I need you, right? I have to believe that this is like the roller coaster of redefining the who are we, who I've you saying like, listen, I've never parented a kid this age before. And they're like, yeah, and I've never been this age before, right? So how do we both get through with a little bit of that? Talk a little bit about that push pull and what it has meant for you to continuously reflect on what your role is.
Yeah, that's a great question, Kathy. There's definitely I think especially with my daughter, although definitely with my son as well, when he was in college, he just happened to be in California. She happens to be here at DU. But around this period of time, I think developmentally for both of them, I think it's the 22-ish area for both of my kids at least. I think there's just this freak out as they've are approaching college graduation. And I mean, this is how I see it. So I'm sure it's different for every family and every kid, but for what I've been noticing with mine is the sort of looking at the world they're going into and work and life, and the path is now the path that they've been on for so long around schooling is coming to an end. And so I think the freak out starts to happen. And as their mom, I think the push-pull really showed up around that time and has showed up around that time. And so it's not always pretty. And the stress comes out in all different ways, about the world's problems and issues and how are they going to make a go of it. Some of that is reflecting on how we prepared them adequately or inadequately, feedback about that. And as a therapist, and their mother, I, really believe that they need time to explore what they got and what they didn't get. And being open and willing to listen to that, ways that they feel prepared or unprepared by how we raise them or what we gave them in terms of tools and coping. And I think a lot of people, if they're being thoughtful, a lot of kids, a lot of young adults, emerging adults, are thinking about those things. And I think they need time and space to think about them and to talk about them. And it can be a lot as a parent. I'm trained not just as a parent, I mean, got on the job training, but as a professional, to kind of roll with that and surf with that. And yet it was still really, really difficult at times when they're, we've given them a lot and education and a lot of support. Hopefully they think that too. And they're still reflecting on things that are hard for them. But the 20s are kind of supposed to be hard and uncomfortable, and it is a big transition. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is, one, don't be surprised if they're reflecting on some of those things and taking some of that out on us as parents. And two, setting some boundaries around, hey, those are really thoughtful, meaningful questions. And I'm happy to talk about it, but not in the middle of something else that you're mad at me about and, blaming me or accusing me of things. And so I think it's all at once, kind of giving them space. Of course, you're feeling these things. And setting the boundaries and limits of it doesn't give you license to also be mean or be disrespectful, or rude. And so setting boundaries around that. And the other thing I'll say is, in the wake of some disagreements, I bake them bread and just take them bread. Because I don't know what else to do, or I'll sometimes it's a goodie bag for my daughter or around holidays, just a little, I'm thinking of you, and just trying to do something nourishing and nurturing for them, while they're struggling, rather than feeling like it's my job to do anything more to either fix it or get my little hands in there to try to help them, but just more to give them the message that unconditionally I'm still here. I guess the one condition is, but try to be respectful and try to be kind to me.
I think it's really it's there's so much in there in that dynamic of it is natural to expect as they are like leaving the structure and predisposition of an academic setting to say, oh, now I'm in the world and what if I don't know if I want to do and what if I know what I want to do but I can't get there. You're right, all that stuff. And to say for them to be comparing to what they thought it was going to be, comparing to what others are people and saying,
That's
oh,
right.
this is, I'm in a spot here. And I wonder if my parents had done something differently
That's right.
to me or for me along the way, if I might not be struggling. So why don't I focus on them and that part of the journey? Because it's so much easier than claiming my own part of the journey right now. Like that's what I'm hearing a little bit in what you're describing.
Yes, exactly. And so I think there's a delicate balance because we need to, I believe, my value system says we need to hear them when they're struggling. And we need to, this is hard. And I understand why you'd want to blame or point fingers or put responsibility on me right now. And I didn't do everything perfectly. And I'm sure there are places where I could have equipped you differently. And yeah, we could have been better about teaching you more about finances or investing money or whatever the thing that they're upset about du jour, you know,
Yeah.
that whatever their concern is. So validating that, but also saying, and we all have to figure some of this stuff out. Like, you deserved perfection and you got a human being raising you. And so there are probably places where you didn't get exactly what you needed. And being a young adult is hard. And finding your way. And some kids, I'm sure in other families, maybe this isn't relatable. Some kids maybe get lift off more readily. Mine just are kinds of kids who adulting is it's a journey. It's been a journey for me. I mean, I'm still learning how to be a grown up.
Yeah.
So
And you're through, and at some point in time you're like, oh, at some point I'm gonna be a mother-in-law or maybe a grandmother, and all those things are things you've not done yet that you will be learning through.
That's right.
Going back, what came to mind for me is that sense of your feelings are valid,
Yes.
but that doesn't mean your opinion is right. And it can be so easy to be on the receiving end of, yes, I want you to be open with your feelings, and I want to validate that for you. But that doesn't necessarily mean that your perspective is accurate, or you don't understand the choices I was making at the time, right? It's not necessarily a time to litigate or
Yes.
defend how we got here, to also say, yeah, that sounds, I can see why that's not a choice maybe you would have made. You're in a spot now. I want to support you going forward, which isn't the same thing as make amends and reparations for where we've been in the past.
Right. Well, that's where the sourdough bread comes in, because that's
There you go.
it's like I made some bread for you. I got that. So,
Right.
like, I can't go back and change that we didn't do more to teach you about finances or I don't know, whatever, or what the thing is. Oh, screen time, or you know, set better limits with phones when, yeah, you guys were like first gen on phones and all this technology. And I mean, I didn't handcuff you to the couch with your eyes propped open and a screen in front of your face. I certainly didn't do that, but I get that, like, you guys were like that generation where it was the, you know, test, we were testing all that out on you, I guess, not purposefully. But I get that it's, you know, it's a huge part of your life and you don't always like how it has impacted you. So it's stuff like that where, yeah, it's, and screens are hard for a lot of people. And how do you want to feel? What role do you want it to have in your life now? And there's not much else to say beyond that. So,
And with 20 somethings, it's not like you can take their screen away for them because you think that's going to work for them. They are
right.
living independently and adults. So like you're like, okay, you are now a grown adult-ish, then you can make the choices about all of these things that whatever you were set up with, now the choices are on your table to make.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Good. I do want to switch to the quicksand three in a minute, but before I do, I
Yes.
want to say if there's like one piece of from your heart to any other parent who's struggling with this kind of all of this, whether it's the shifting of parenting, the shifting of identity at this age, the realization of what it means to be me in an empty nest, is there a piece of advice you would give people from your heart?
Yes, I think the kind of image I always think about, and I use this with my clients a lot, is the image of open palms. And that is, I think of my kids, my adult kids, as little birds who are flying in and landing periodically in the palm of my hand. And not to grab at them when they land and crush them, but to kind of keep a sort of a gentle hold and a gentle ground beneath them while they rest there. And when they fly off, they fly off. And sometimes you miss them when they're not just resting there, but not to try to grab them out of the air and force them to sit in the palm of your hand. I think that goes back to that concept of our commitments to one another and trusting our commitments that we have with one another. And that is an ongoing conversation, and that they will land because they want to. But I don't ever want them to be there out of obligation, because they think that they have to, because they think that I need them to in that way. But that they're always welcome. And for as long as they're there, I'm going to enjoy the heck out of that.
I love that open palm, that picture, right? We can picture what that looks like, and we can picture the bird landing because you want it. And of course you're like, oh my gosh, I have it, and you don't want to like pet it to death. But it's like, right, but that relationship to that commitment versus obligation, right? That really just brings it to such a beautiful vision of what would it mean to have commitment, the bird landing because it wants to, and being able to rest in a way that feels safe to both, but as opposed to obligation, which is I'm only landing here because you grabbed me, and that's not why we want here. Oh, I love
That's
that.
right.
Thank you, Meredith. All
Yeah.
right, I want to switch to the quicksand three, which I ask everybody, as you know. So the first question is, what is a way when life gets really, you've been avoiding and procrastinating and not doing things, what is a way that you kind of get yourself to do the thing you've been avoiding?
Electronic dance music. So EDM, we know it releases dopamine. It gets me going. It gets me up. It gets me unloading the dishwasher, doing the thing I don't want to do. It gets me on the treadmill at 6 o'clock pretty much every morning, or every morning I have a run on the schedule. So it's what kind of gets me doing the thing that's hard, and then I always feel great afterwards.
I love that. And I guess it's really hard to resist a great dance tune.
That's right.
Okay, next question. If skills and money and time and history and anything else were not a factor, what's a career or job you might have liked to have tried?
Professional snowboarder, half pipe, or really like any kind of ultra athlete. I would have, Olympic, maybe not distance runner, maybe a sprinter. I don't know. But an athlete.
Yeah. And again, you are athletic, and you when you went through your whole list, you'd even mention your very competent yoga practice, right? Like there's so much that you are just so in tune with your body, that it yeah, it's it would not surprise me if we could rewind back a few decades, you absolutely could have been one of those Olympic athletes. So finally, when things get crazy and chaotic, what is a way that you recharge or hit the reset button?
Well, in alignment with my sporty hobbies, just getting up to the mountains. And so seasonally, right now we call it mud season because it's spring. But normally it's snowboarding, trail running, paddle boarding, anything to just be out in nature and exploring. I love just getting over the crest of a hill and seeing what's on the other side. And so that could be in snow or with the sun shining up in the mountains.
I love it. I love that you've created a whole life, you and your family, to make that a priority and make that available. You live in the place where people who need that have to live. And so I love that. Meredith, thank you so much. I'm so grateful that you agreed to spend time with me and share so much about all of this. And thank you for being a part of Surfing the Quicksand.
Oh, my pleasure, Kathy. Such a delight to be here with you.
Thanks. could have talked about a lot of other topics, right? Meredith is a great example of so many of us, right? A woman in midlife who's dealing with perimenopause and menopause and health issues and understanding what being an empty nester is about and our relationships to others and our family shifting and what that means and what our roles are. So much of us are dealing with that every single day. And I'm so touched that she was willing to be vulnerable and open and sharing with the world some of what she's been processing and some of the decisions she's come up with along the way and her openness that we're not going to get all of this right. We may not get any of this right, but it doesn't change how important it is for us to stay open and stay listening and listening to our bodies and listening to the people that we trust around us when it's time for us to evolve to what's next. Thanks so much for being here.